Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's B-Y-T-E.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
All right, what is up, Gypsy Gang? We are back for another episode of the Gypsy Tales podcast, and this is a really cool one. This is with a gentleman by the name of Joe Lopez, and it is in collaboration with the Hypecast once again. If you listen to the podcast that we did with Alex Volkanovsky, you would have heard the reverence in which he spoke of his coach, Joe. The very next day, we sat down with Joe and heard a really incredible story about how he came to open his own gym. He basically was just a bouncer and then started his own security firm. That security firm started to train fighters, which led to the gym, which has ultimately ended, not ended, but the story so far, I guess, means that he now has a two-time UFC world champion that has he never done martial arts until he stepped into Joe's gym. So it's a truly incredible story. Joe's one of the good old boys, and I really, really enjoyed listening to Joe talk and doing this podcast once again with Miles and Sel. Just got to give a bit of a shout out to our sponsors for this episode, the guys at Macro Kitchen. You can head to macrokitchen.com.au and use the code GypsyGang10 for 10% off your order. Macro Kitchen is in Burleigh. They are basically across the freeway, across the Gold Coast Highway from Wahoo's, and everything gets made fresh there, and they do a delivery service if you're within a certain range, or you can do pickups, or they also do dine-in. I have done all of the above. I've dine-in there when I can, but they really come in handy for me when I want to eat something that's super healthy and has never been frozen, but I kind of just don't have the time. It fits in really well with the meal prep that I do. If I don't get to do a full meal prep on Sundays, I will do Monday to sort of Wednesday, and then I'll have Thursday, Friday where I'm eating Macro Kitchen. Really good prices, amazing food, and definitely, it's definitely worth the investment in yourself. It's very, very, very easy to get caught up with Uber Eats and kind of just eating shit food. But if you've got a bunch of Macro Kitchen containers in the fridge, you're going to be doing yourself and your health a big service. So again, macrokitchen.com.au, use the code GypsyGang10. We're also brought to you by Combat Nutrition. You can head to cmbt.com.au. These guys, Miles and Sel, actually own this company. And I have been using this product for a while now, but I guess it wasn't until COVID where I really started to be quite religious with using the protein as well as the octane, which is like the kind of amino acid type formula. And I was training quite hard through the COVID period, and I really finally sort of start to see some benefits of being quite consistent with supplements. Obviously, a good diet is first and foremost, but the supplements that these guys do, they are basically the first sports nutrition brand and range of products that's developed just for combat athletes. I think this translates to moto really well as well. I lost a fight with my bike on the weekend, so I guess you could say I'm a combat athlete in that sense. It's 100% natural and all derived from organic whole foods and plant-based ingredients. It's gluten and dairy-free. And if you are going to fight in the UFC, it's actually drug-tested, ensuring that all of the products are safe for WADA-tested sports. Yeah, I can't say enough about the products. It's definitely helped me, and now that I'm injured, it's going to be even more important for my recovery. Also brought to you by the guys at Anarchy Trailers. These guys are really, really cool. Their trailers are all 100%, not only Australian made, but they're 100% custom made to order. They've got a huge range of color choices for the interior and external exterior of your trailer. They all use Alco running gear. And the whole process when you are building a trailer through these guys is basically just focused on exactly what you need. They do bike trailers, they do tradie trailers, they do food trucks, they do everything. Their products are absolutely amazing, and I'm quite excited to do a trip one day to the track using one of their trailers. So huge shout out to those guys. Their website is coming soon, but you can head to Anarchy Trailers on Instagram and just check out all of the crazy stuff that they have built. Really cool company, based right here on the Gold Coast, and a really good company to get behind. Thank you to everybody for listening to this prolonged intro. Really appreciate it. And you guys also, if you want to rep some Gypsy swag, you can head to gypsy-tales.com. Merch definitely is a great way to support the show. And if you want to support the show for free, please just leave us a nice little iTunes review. That definitely helps. I kind of never ask for that kind of stuff, but it actually is quite important. So would be rad if you could all go and do that. Until then, I am on the couch, but I will still be able to record podcasts. So I will be trying to get in there this week and bang out a couple for y'all. Really appreciate everybody in the Gypsy Gang. And as always, enjoy this episode with Joe Lopez and Miles and Sel from Hypecast.
All right, guys, we're back. Gypsy Tales times Combat Nutrition Collaboration Podcast. That's what it is now, isn't it?
Yeah, we're doing it.
This is going to have to be like a regular thing.
I'm down.
And we obviously had Alex Volkanovsky, the UFC featherweight champion, just on our last collaboration podcast. But hey, there is absolutely no champion without the man behind the champion, Joe Lopez. We absolutely had to get you on this episode, brother. Everyone wants to hear from you. That's what everyone wants to hear from you. They want to hear from the champ.
Yeah, who is the champ?
welcome, brother. Thanks so much for your time.
Thanks for having me, guys.
We obviously, you know, we can go straight into talking about obviously martial arts and all these sorts of things, but we want to take this on a little bit of a different tangent. We want to hear about you and how you got started in your business career, because a lot of people wouldn't even know about the fact that you ran security companies for a while. Is that right?
Yeah, I still do.
Tell us about it.
Well, I got started because I did martial arts, and then in the end I went back to it, you know. But I was training, and because I could sort of, I guess, look after myself, I got a job, you know. Well, my first job actually was I was doing a manager's course in hospitality, and we got had to do some work experience in a bar. Anyway, after the second week there, they gave me a job, and I was just working. I was, you know, a young man. It was a bit of fun. And then one day this guy grabbed one of the waitresses in the club. Anyway, I went up and I told the guy, you know, he couldn't grab her, and he sort of turned on me, and I put him in a bit of a wrist lock, and I grabbed him, and then the two security guys came over to grab him, and he just knocked the other guy over, and then he grabbed the manager around the throat, and I came in again from behind, put him in a wrist lock, and I got him out, and the next week I was on the door. So that's how I started. Because I wasn't so a big good. Guy, and in those days all the security guys were all monsters, and the guys that were at the front bar, they go, what was that stuff you just did, you know? Because in those days I wasn't much into grappling or all that sort of stuff, but I'd done a bit of, I did a lot of Hapkido and that, and they involved a lot of the wrist locks, and it worked just perfectly into the security game, and yeah, and that's it, you know.
What year was that, roughly?
Oh, jeez, probably 83, 84.
Yeah, so this is early days.
Yeah. There was the days, no security license, you know. Hit first, ask questions later type days, you know.
Bring it back.
So then, obviously, you just kept going. And then, what was the transition into starting your own business in security?
Well, I was just working on the door with a guy on a Sunday night, and he was working at another club on a Friday night. He was a student here at the uni. He's from South Africa, and he said, do you know anybody that can work on the door with me on Friday night at this club? And I went, yeah, I know heaps of guys, you know, this is my hometown. So in those days you really didn't even have to have a business or anything, and I said, yeah, I got him a guy. And then next week he asked me, could I get him another guy? And I went, yeah. And then I said, we're having a beer on the Sunday after work. And I said, man, I got to start. I charge $10 or something to get these guys. And in the end, I remember I used to make $60 extra a weekend. And I used to go, man, just forget my mate's jobs. I'm making $60. And I thought I was a real hero. Yeah. I mean, $60 in those days probably was like a couple of $100 today. Hey, and it was just a hobby. I started it as a hobby. And just enjoyed doing it, you know. It was a fun way to meet girls and have a bit of fun, and you know, and I guess you get off on the adrenaline too, you know, and the comradeship, you especially in those days, because all the guys really stuck together. It's a lot different today, you know. The camera has changed everything, you know. Back in those days it was, you really had to trust the guys you worked with and who had your back, and that's all that counted. So you really built these really strong bonds and friendships, which I still have today, you know. Still, a lot of the guys that I worked with are still some of my best friends, you know, from 30 years ago, you know. Like I said, you can't get a bond like that unless, you know, you've had to put each other's lives in each other's hands, you know.
Mm-hmm. Paint the picture for people of what security is like back in the 80s, because it's completely different now. It's as you said, the cameras change things. You talk about mateship and you having to look after your mates back, which a lot of younger listeners probably don't really understand what that's like.
It was a lot of, you know, like I said before, punch first, ask questions later. And I really didn't like that approach, to tell you the truth. I always thought that if I can talk somebody out, it was a lot easier than having to drag somebody out or punch. And I honestly can say that, unless it's different when guys have attacked me, but guys that I've ever had to hit, I could probably put it on my hands, because if you start punching, everybody starts to punch. So the best approach is how you speak to people, you know, your mannerism and the way you present yourself, that you're confident and you speak confidently. People respect that. And the guys that don't, they're usually the guys you don't need to worry about, you know. Like I said, the friendship and the bonds were something special. Like I said, it was a different era, you know. They've made it so hard now in the security industry. I mean, some things are good, but, you know, it's so hard now to get good guys to do Fridays and Saturday nights when they've got to do a two-week course, and now they're going to say they're going to make it for a month. So that just narrows the gene pool down of good guys that are going to who can take 2 weeks off, because guys that are usually good, have usually got another job, so they're not going to take 2 weeks holidays to earn the crappy money that they do get this day, because really the money hasn't increased that much over the years because of the undercutting and all the bad shit that comes behind it, you know. But I'm still here. It still makes me – I still get a living out of it.
Yep.
Like I said, I started on the doors, and then I went on to actually training dogs, you know. One stage I had 20 security dogs.
Wow.
Yeah.
See, this is the shit I want to hear.
I heard part of this like on a weird drunken night with Joe and Brocky. And then Brocky just kept like wanting to get one of Joe's dogs. Weird story, but it's man, this shit's fascinating. That you clearly coaching and training is something that's built in you. Like it must be like from coaching world champions to training security to training security dogs. Like, is that something you've always had inbuilt as a mechanism?
I had a bad experience with, one of the clubs I was with, and I sort of got turned off people, and working in nightclubs turns you off people after a while, because you just get to see the bad side of them. You don't get to see the good side. And yeah, you just get this, I want to train dogs because at least they're loyal. The problem is I started training them, and then, like one guy had this really good dog, and the guy brings him back and he says, oh, he's got a bit of a cut eye on because he ran into a barbed wire fence. And I said, oh, yeah, what happened? He says, well, I had him chasing rabbits. And I lost it. I said, man, I've been training this dog to look for humans, and now you've turned him into a hunting dog. He's a security dog, not a hunting dog. Mm-hmm. That sort of stuff. And then you leave dogs out, and dogs can't get their own water or their own food, and you entrust people to do it and they don't do it, and it just got too much. Again, people piss me off that I had to let the animals go, because it's a 7-day-a-week job, and if you have something on you got to trust someone to actually do it, and that's the hard part. So I ended up giving that away as well. Yeah. And went back to the humans.
Was Wollongong a rough city? Does it have a reputation as a rough city? Or because some towns in Australia, definitely, like, to work security in certain towns is like a rough gig.
Well, it was. And at one stage there, with a partner, we had probably 100 guys working nightclubs and pubs in Sydney. We ran most of them. And the boys from Sydney used to always say it was harder to work in Wollongong than it was in Sydney, because a lot of places in Sydney, even though you're getting different people in, you don't know who owns the club and you don't know who these guys are. So people are a little bit more well-behaved, where here you get a lot of people, especially in those days, used to get a lot of the lebs come down from Western Sydney, all the people from Campbelltown, and they were our main sort of clientele. They'd come down in, and the local guys, and it was a matter of see who's the toughest, and we got a lot of ethnics, so it was very well, not one-on-one, it was 10, 20 people at times, we ran the nightclub down here, Waves. I used to have 30 guards there working on a Saturday night. We'd get over the night, the place was licensed for 1500 people. But we'd go through the doors, 2,500 people a night.
Shit.
We'd have lineups from the beginning of the night till about 1 o'clock in the morning. It was just a constant flow of people. And like I said, it was a big nightclub, had a pub next door, and then had a restaurant next door to that. And the amount of people that was there was I used to have to map out like my battle plan for that venue, because it was that big, so I knew where every guard was and in case something happened. And
how do you manage the PR of having a security company? Because when I was growing up, 18, going to clubs in Surfers Paradise, for example, you would run into security guards and you would very quickly form an opinion of them being control freaks or them wanting to actually get into fights and start fights and things like that, just for an excuse to take control of a situation and take some guys around the corner in an alley and bash the shit out of them and stuff like that. So it's easy to form an opinion about or make a stereotype of security guards. Have you found yourself having to sort of, battle your way through opinions or anything like that? Or
I've never been that way, and I've never believed in it, and I can tell you stories, why it shouldn't be that way. I think a lot of these times, most of the guys can't fight. That's the big thing I found, because I've always had a gym, most of the training we did was with the guys that we work with, because that's what we said before, that we're all friends and we all hung out together, and it was just that camaraderie that we had. And all the guys that could fight used to show up to train. All the guys that couldn't, And they were the ones that likely punch first and ask questions later. Yeah.
This is exactly the conversation Sel and I have just been having about what's happening in the US at the moment and seeing the police brutality. And we were talking about it. We were all talking about it.
Yeah.
And we just literally came to the conclusion. I think, Jace, you were telling us about, you know, the lack of
training
that a lot of the police force actually do. And they're just resorting
to... what did you say? 4 hours?
It's 4 hours.
Of combat training in a year for cops.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like, I do more of that in jiu-jitsu
in
the first 3 days of the week.
Yeah.
Every week.
But look, the other side, and the other side that people don't see is that not only that, but police, that a lot of them suffer from PTSD.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I've seen it, and I've come through it myself, you know, but I used to... Yeah, people used to say, you've got it. And I used to say, because, you know, everywhere I went, I was like this, you know, because people are threatening you all the time. Mm-hmm. You're always there. And all of a sudden you become a different person. Mm-hmm. And
you know what can happen to you as well if you don't act like that.
And no one calls the cops to say, how you going? Yeah. You know, they're only calling the cops because something's wrong. You know, and I'm not sticking up for them because there's a lot of bad cops out there, but there's a lot of good cops that I've seen turn bad because they constantly just have a negativity towards them. And I think... that and having something like even the guys on the door, I used to see, you know, I used to see good guys turn bad, and I say, man, have a couple of weeks off because it starts to get to you, you know. A 100 guys come to the door and insult you, and then the 101 comes up and he's the one that breaks the camel's back, you know, and he's the only one that you remember about, you know, you've had such a good night, and then that one person ruins it for you.
That, do you know, Grant Bradshaw and Rachel Bradshaw by any chance? They're up on the Central Coast. They have a jiu-jitsu gym up there.
No, I don't.
They're involved in the police force, and she put up a post recently, and it was very fascinating, and I wish I could recite what it said, but it was basically outlining the rigorous training that cops have to go through, and they don't really get paid that much, and they don't really, you know, they're not really that well supported. And then what their actual job is they're having to face all of these dangerous situations every day. And she put up this photo of all of these cops super beaten up, obviously after really bad situations. And yeah, it's crazy when you think about it. And it's interesting what you said about sort of guys turning bad. I could relate to it from being in law, and I was in corporate and commercial litigation, and my whole day revolved around arguments.
Yeah.
And that's why I left, because it was just killing my soul. So how do you kind of, I know you said if you see someone sort of turning bad, you give them a couple of weeks off, but is there just sort of making sure that everyone's kind of mind is all right?
Yeah, well...
do you check up on the boys?
Well, I always, and again, it came to the guys you were working with that we're all going to lose it. When we start to lose it, when somebody else has got to take over, so it doesn't become personal to you, because it's just a job, you know. At the end of the day, and like I said, it's easier said than done, you know, because somebody will sort of push you there. But I've always gone try to not let – I put it in my head that I'm not going to give them the response that they're after. Mm-hmm. Because they're after that response, I'm going to beat them by not giving them the response that they want. And I'll tell you a good story. There was a guy, a good friend of mine, Vito Gaudiosi, former Australian middleweight champion, boxing champion. Let me get that right. It's a big title. and, you know, he's an Italian fella. You know, looks very Italian. Someone got kicked out and we were on the door, and he was trying to get our attention, you know, and he kept at us, and we're just talking like he doesn't exist. Honestly, we just fade them out like they're there insulting us, and we're just continuing our conversation. And then he kept up to Vito, and he's gone, Vito, we didn't know his name. He's gone, hey, you wog boy. Can I swear on this thing?
Yeah.
Yeah. He's going, hey, you wog boy. And he's gone, what? And he's gone, hey, wog boy, I fucked your mother. And he's kept talking. He's going, hey, did you hear what I said, wog boy? I fucked your mother. And he looked at him and he goes, did you just say you fucked my mother? He goes, yeah, I did. What are you going to do about it? He says, have you seen my mother? She's this tall and this round, and you've been rooting her, have you? Like, the guy didn't, like, we all just cracked up, and the guy just didn't know what to do. He just said, these guys are fucked, and walked off, you know? Like,
that's so good.
And I use that, like, when I was teaching security as a story that you can't let them win by giving them the reaction they want. And to me, that's how I've not let them get me upset, you know?
That's amazing.
And same as getting people out of the club. The best way is to get people out is I tap them on the shoulder and I says, can you come with me? And I'd start walking, 90% of people follow you. And if they don't, you just Jedi tell them your mate's at the door, you know, and they go, what mate? And they go, oh, one of your mates is, and they'll tell you, John, I go, yeah, that's him, he's at the door, he can't get in and he wants to give you something, and you take him to the door and then you go, see you later, mate.
That's genius.
The job that you did, I feel like would have given you a very, very unique ability to tell instantly if someone could actually fight. And then you fast forward to the owning a gym and being a trainer, you would have such a knack for going, this dude's a fighter, this dude's not a fighter.
That's sort of different. On the door, it's you're looking more for, yeah, intoxication number one, you know, like, if are they carrying a knife here? What have they got in their pockets? The way they're walking up. And like I tell all the guys, I says, everyone that walks to the door, you've got to say hello. Mm-hmm. And if they don't say hello to them, I grab them and I go, hey, mate, I just said hello to you. And if they get upset at me, I go, mate, you're not coming in. And they go, I haven't done anything. Oh, yeah. Well, you're getting angry at me and I've just said hello to you. Yeah. What are you going to do when someone bumps into you inside, yeah, you know? So your front door is always your first line of defence. So
best screening process.
Yeah. So, yeah, and just by the way they walk, by the way they talk, by talking to them, you know, you've got to engage with them to know who you're going to let in, because, like I always say, it's a lot easier to stop them at the door than try and drag them back out the door.
Sure.
So the guy on the door has really got an important job to play, you know. And, I mean, like I said, it's a – I used to – back in the day, I used to have – 8 guards and 2 shirt fillers. Now I've got 8 shirt fillers and 2 guards. You know, that's how it's working per rata for how the guards are these days,
yeah,
unfortunately.
All the guards that you get on board, talking about screening processes, do you expect that they have some sort of martial arts training, or do you put them through martial arts training? Obviously, you can't do that to hundreds of guys, but...
I give them an option that they can train, and I do run, like officer survival tactics, yep, and it's just very basic things. A lot of it is just how you stand, you know, when someone's starting to get aggressive, you stand a certain way, you know, and be ready. And a lot of the times you giving away that body language, guys that can fight go, oh, geez, this guy's ready. You know, guys that can't fight, well, they're not going to be a problem anyway, you know. But, you know, the bad thing today is probably to the earlier days is there's a lot more chemicals out there, you know. Mm-hmm. Guys are on...
Yeah, meth.
And those guys are dangerous, you know, because you can choke them. Superhuman strength, and you choke them out, and within... I mean, I've had guys here, I feel them go limp, I let them go, and before my hand hasn't even come out off their throat, and they're already going at me, you know, and back on again, you feel them go limp. The cops come in and they go, let him go. I go, mate, I'd put the handcuffs on him.
Yeah.
Please listen to what I've got to say. Some of them don't. They think that they're better than whatever, and you let them go. And I've seen cops get punched in the head. The smart cops, they listen to what what you're doing, and they handcuff them while you've still got some sort of control over them, because, the strength and... Oh.
Did it become like a chicken and an egg situation where you add a whole lot of security people, you realise training was needed, you had a training background yourself and thought I should create a home for this? Or was it the gym just naturally an evolution for you that you always wanted to get to?
No, it was... When I got to 40, I just sort of went, man, I'm getting too old to be on these doors. And the business was pretty successful. And I said, I had a couple of good guys at higher positions, and I gave one of them my job as the operations manager, and I wanted to take a backward step and do what I loved doing, which was the martial arts and teaching and traveling, you know, so I wasn't on the job, because honestly, when you're the operations manager, it's a 24/7 hour job, you know, because guys will ring you at 3 o'clock, guys will ring you at 2 o'clock, guys will ring you at 6 o'clock in the morning, you know. I tell them, man, we're not 7-Eleven here, you know. It's, yeah. You know, if it's important, no worries, I'm here. But, you know, if it can wait till the morning or till a reasonable time, you know, then wait, you know. But, you know, people are people.
Tell us about your martial arts history and where it started. And you were talking about doing some Hapkido and stuff like that. You've obviously done a lot of jiu-jitsu. You've done a lot of MMA now. Tell us where it started and its evolution.
Well, probably when I was a little kid, probably 9 or 10 or something, I did judo for about 3 or 4 years. Didn't take it seriously. I was just doing it because a couple of the guys I was friends with, they were doing it, and I wasn't really into the competing side and all that. I just liked the fun and being with the guys. And then I really got into surfing, so I surfed for years and years. And then the boys up the beach when we were about 17, there was a local guy that started a Taekwondo club, and we all rocked up there one night, and probably out of the 20 of us that started, I think probably 2 of us kept going, you know, and everybody else just stopped off in dribs and drabs, which is the martial arts still to this day, you know. Out of 20 people, probably 2 will come through all the way, you know, and probably only one of them will stick it out to forever, you know. It's just the way it is.
Mm-hmm. And then where did it go from there? So you did the Taekwondo, and then when did you get into jiu-jitsu? What age?
Well, probably straight after, you know, the first UFC, you know. Yeah. We got the VCR and we got it and watched it and said, man, we've got to do this. And went out and done, some guy brought John Will down here to Wollongong, and I did his seminar, and I just loved it. I love the simplicity of it, how it worked, you know, the leverage and all. And, yeah, but back in those days, again, it was very, very hard. You know, it's not like today where you've got YouTube, it's mainstream. I was at a boxing gym at that stage, and, you know, to get anybody, you know, especially that's always about, you know, see how our guys are, all banter and everything else. You tell them that you want to touch them here and there. And, and, you know, okay, you come into my guard and they're looking at you like, you know. Or somebody walks in and you're doing it and it was on, you know. So it was very hard to get training partners and people to want to actually train with you in jiu-jitsu, you know, unless they were into it, you know, especially coming, like I said, because I was at a boxing gym at that stage, and it was really, really hard.
I must admit, when me, Jason, Jackson were all doing jiu-jitsu in the lounge room just right here in front of us, and then the maid came in, we all just stopped. Yeah. We couldn't get going.
Yeah.
I still had more things we wanted to run over.
Yeah. We're all like, oh yeah, that's right, we're grown ass men.
We're in the cafe before, and then Jason's like, remember I did this? And I was like, yeah. And then we were wrestling each other in the cafe, and then all these civilians are like, what's wrong with these people?
Civilians.
Where's the social distancing?
Mate. True.
And then that part. So obviously you must have taken on a real love and passion for the strategy side of combat sports, because if I thought about Joe, I think of a strategy man. I think of he's the strategy and the mind behind, obviously, the champion. And I know that you've got an amazing team, and you work with the CKB team, and you work with the Tiger team, and just some incredible minds of the sport. But is the strategy something that gets you fired up?
I don't know. I like the whole thing, but mainly I really like working with the athlete, because unless you're there and you're doing things and getting them to try things, and you go, yep, that works, no, that doesn't work, and getting your athlete to have his own, like a lot of people go, oh, you got to worry about Aldo's leg kicks. Well, no, Aldo has to worry about our leg kicks, you know. Yeah, you know, Max had he was the, you know, the volume striker. Well, we went out there and we volume strike Max, you know. So sometimes you just have to see what they do and see if you can do it better, or you can counter what they're doing, you know, which we did do a lot of. You know, we broke a lot of Max's momentum and his rhythm, and that was, you know, obviously they're the game plans and that. But to me, I really enjoy, especially when there's – no fight, and we can just experiment and go, oh, yeah, that works. No, that doesn't work, or maybe we need to do it this way. And that kind of stuff I really like doing. And even now, like going into this next fight, you know, we've seen a lot of things that Max did well against Alex, and we worked on those things. But at the end of the day, you don't know. Mm-hmm. You know, Max could come out and say, hey, I'm going to change my complete style, but I doubt whether he will, yeah, because that's the way he is. But you've got that thing, and that's why one of the things I really like doing is getting the guys to spar as many different people as possible. Mm-hmm. And you know, sometimes people are scared. They go, oh, I don't think I'm up to Alex's level. I mean, as long as they've got some ability, mm-hmm, you know, and they're not scared to be punched, you can learn off everybody, you know, even if it's just that cruising round where you can get your breath back to go again, you know. I mean, it's a bit different when you're in fight camp. You know, you've got specific things, you've got specific goals. But as a general, when you haven't got a fight plan, to spar as many different people and learn, you know, even what not to do, you mm-hmm know. This guy's doing this, this ain't working, you know, I'm not going to do that, you know.
Something that I love about you, Joe, is there's no egos involved. And what you said just then speaks so true. You know, you love Alex and you love the guys to get as much cross training as possible. And that's not necessarily, you know, we talk about it, we've been talking about a lot on this trip. If you think about like a traditional jiu-jitsu gym or a traditional jiu-jitsu culture, and especially sort of maybe more the traditional Brazilian style jiu-jitsu, they're very adamant that you just train with them and them only. And if you're not with them, they're, you know, you're against them sort of mentality.
Yes.
And I think that you've never had the walls up. You've always brought guys in, or you've gone with Alex and traveled to obviously Tiger and City Kickboxing and all these sorts of things. It really does help bring the industry forward and shows that, you know, we can all train together. We don't have to, you know, create these divisions and segregate ourselves. And
for sure, to me it's a sport, you know. So there's got to be a winner and there's got to be a loser. I mean, there's good that there's rivalries, and you know, the Conor McGregors, because they sell it to the casual fan. But you know, not 90% of the people that, you know, the hardcore people that are actually doing the sport, they don't think that way. I mean, some do. I mean, you're always going to get nutters. I think we're all nuts doing it, but you get guys that are a special level of it, and you know, and
Diego Sanchez.
Yeah, and you know, it is what the sport. But for me, and I mean, Eugene said that to me, that what he liked about me as a coach, that I wasn't afraid to let Alex go and train somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And to me, if he gets more out of training with you than he does for me, well, you know, you're turning the light on, I'm not, you know, keep the light on, you know.
That's obviously why Alex stays.
Yeah. Though,
right?
Yeah.
He feels so comfortable. True. He knows that you have his best interests
that's
at heart.
I think that's what it is like to literally know, like, oh, so he cares enough about me that he'd be happy for me to go to some other gym and lose all of that. For me, it's like, you go, I kind of want to be around that dude. It's so hard to like find that in a person, like that level of, and it shows a lot of like, there's just zero insecurity about it on your front. But you sort of, you can't leave that when you've got that. You're like, man, this is such a rare thing to find. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you could kind of build everything else around that.
Yeah, 100%.
Well, a lot of people don't know, like they asked that Alex went to Tiger, but we signed him up to go to Tiger,
yeah,
and get that scholarship. And when he went there, I thought, oh, he's probably gone. He's with all these high-level guys, you know. Brian Ebersole was there, Robert Huerta, they were the two MMA wrestling coaches there, and, you know, top high-level guys, you know. And we had a fight coming, and he goes, no, I want to finish the camp back with you because I want to get everything right. And that shocked me, you know, at first. I went, oh, maybe I'm not that bad, you know. Mm-hmm. And then I guess it gave me a bit more confidence in my own ability. Not that I doubted it, but like I said, I think, and I say this to everyone, as a fighter, it's all about you. And as a coach, it's got to be about your fighters, you know, and what you can give to them, you know. And I'll look at, you know, say you roll, and I'll go, oh, Miles, been watching this guy, go and check him out. You know, he's got these moves. He looks to your body style. He moves very similar to you. Work on that, you know. And just those things, you know, just to help you with your jiu-jitsu or whatever. They're the things that I really enjoy there, and then watching you progress and getting better on those moves. I used to hate it with Alex. I'd show him a move and the next minute he's submitting me with it, you know.
Alex talked about this a bit, but what's it like bringing everything back to this part of the world? Like, you guys have brought everything back. Like, you brought belts back, championships, a name for this area. We rolled up to the hotel here. Mm-hmm. They said, oh, you guys look like you're up to something fun. And we're like, oh, cool. Yeah, we're just here to film. We weren't name dropping or anything. We're just like, we're here to film a UFC fight. They're like, Volko? Oh, we can't wait for him to rock up. What time's he getting here? Obviously, this is a small community, yeah. But what you've done is blown it up. Mm-hmm. I mean, we go to Windang, where obviously the gym is. You've got a gym there. You've got your home near there. You both live right around the corner from there. Alex was saying that people constantly say, man, what are you doing here? You should be in America. You've got this UFC belt and all this type of stuff. He's like, no, I should be here training with you because this is where it's all happening. What's it feel like to be the man behind...
The man?
Bringing that to this area of the world.
Oh, still the same.
Still the same.
Yeah, I don't, you know, I get to the gym early and I make sure it's clean and I've got my OCD problems where everything's got to be in its place.
Jackson owes you some.
Yeah, and if someone's left something behind, I'll write their name on the board so they know, you know, they've got to be, they've got to be punished.
I firmly believe that that's what makes your gym one of the best gyms anywhere in the world. It can be said that it's one of the best gyms in the world simply because, one, you got the UFC champion of the world, but two, if the UFC champion of the world leaves his gloves there, you're giving him shit. If Jackson's left his gloves there, you're giving him shit. Yeah. It doesn't matter who you are, whatever standing you are, it's the same rules apply and everyone treats the place with respect.
That's Joe's house.
Yeah. And look, I'll clean the floor. Alex cleans the floor. Everyone's got to have a turn at cleaning. You know, it's not, I make that. And I used to tell the guys, I said, when I first started, you know, especially the traditional martial arts, it was like the honour for you to be the guy to sweep the floor before we all trained on the wooden floors. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the guys didn't believe me. And then one of the guys was looking at reading some Japanese old philosophy books and stuff, and he's going, you're right, that's what they used to do. And I go, I wasn't lying. Yeah. He says, I thought you were just saying that so we'd all clean the floor for you. I go, no, I'm doing it because the gym's, I'm honouring the gym at the moment. One day you guys might feel the honour to do it. Now I make them all do it.
So sick.
Do you try and maintain that traditional aspect of martial arts in some way in the gym? Because obviously martial arts has evolved so much and it's becoming this modern sport. Do you try and maintain some sort of level of tradition?
Look, just the respect thing, yep. You know, and you know, the honour and, you know, and all that, because that's really good for your head, I think, you know, that just having that self-control. And, I was right into bowing and all that, but I haven't bowed, you know, especially when you've been to a boxing gym for a long time, you've trained out of those, you sort of lose a lot of that traditional thing, you know, and then you start going to the jiu-jitsu and they're bowing into the mats, and then you've got other jiu-jitsu clubs that don't do it, you know. Mm-hmm. When I was with Peter Dabin, you know, I was, that they weren't very traditional in the way they approached their jiu-jitsu, you know, still had high-level guys and everything else, but they weren't. And then now I'm training with Treko, and he's more of a, you know, traditional, so they all bow onto the mats. They're very, he's very traditional in his way of teaching, or not teaching in that side of it, the bowing in and bowing out and the lining up and everything else, where at Peter DeBean's it was more cash, you know, show up, leave when you want, you know. It was, yeah, pretty cruisy.
It sort of like suits the individual. Hey, if you appreciate that sort of traditional aspect, it suits you. If you're not into it, you know.
Yeah.
Every club has their vibe and their, you know, focus and culture and all these sorts of things.
Yeah, I don't think there's like a wrong way to do it.
Sure.
I feel like that it's one of those things that you know, like for yourself, it's your gym, and it's like, well, if I would go into your gym, I'd have zero problems doing whatever it was that you wanted me to do, because it's your house, you know. Yeah. And I don't think that a person should be, you know, if you own a gym, you should be able to choose the shit that you want to do. And it's just purely the respect of the person that built that house. That's really whatever it is. You should sort of do it just purely on that reason for me, you know?
Yeah. The only people I really emphasize the going very traditional is the kids, because there's a lot of discipline goes into the kids. I enjoy teaching the kids, again, only because they learn so quick and they're a lot more willing to please, so you get a lot of results very quick, you know.
Your young fella had some good jiu-jitsu today.
Yeah, he did.
There was some cool transitions that he had going on.
Yeah, he loves jiu-jitsu. And it's so funny, he's only started 12 months ago.
Yeah, right.
He used to go to the – because he never wanted to train with me, because as soon as I'd say anything, he'd just run out.
Yeah.
So my wife took him to my old boxing gym, and he trained there for about 18 months, but he didn't like it. And then – He was playing soccer and didn't really want to play it. So I said, send him out to Trecco's. So my wife sent him out to Trecco's. And
which is the other, the jiu-jitsu?
Yeah, that's gym. Who we're affiliated with now. Trecco, he's a former UFC fighter, and he's been helping out in the camp as well.
Awesome.
Yeah, he's Trecco's competed in everything from, the local MMA scene to getting into the UFC. He's competed in Sambo. Yeah, I think he's won some titles in that, you know, I think world titles or whatever, I'm not sure, but he's competed at the ACC's for BJJ, he's competed at the Worlds for BJJ, he's competed at black belt level for judo. He just loves competing, and he's brought a lot of good things to the camp. He's, you know, old school pressure, stay heavy on top, and that's one of the things we've been, trying to get into the game, you know, that jiu-jitsu pressure if you get on top, you know.
Let's obviously talk about Alex, all right? He came to you, I think he said around 9 years ago, and he hasn't left.
Yeah.
Talk to us about Alex walking into the gym and his evolution to now becoming the UFC world champion. I mean, it really does feel like a unique situation that he's just stuck with you. He's been loyal to the gym and his coach and all these sorts of things, especially like we were just saying before, in a world where everyone just says, because I feel it where we are, everyone's just like, oh, we've got to go to America. You've got to go to here. You've got to go there.
Well, I used to think that as well too. And then again, it's believing that you don't need it, because to me it was the most important thing, especially when you're getting ready for a fight, is your training partners.
Mm-hmm.
And first we were going to Tiger, and most of the guys that we would hook up with were all the guys that are at City Kickboxing, apart from the Hickman brothers and a few other guys, Emilio and the boys and Woody. That to me, especially, that you need guys that you can trust, that are going to push you, but they're not going to hurt you. You know, a lot of these things, as you see, we're pushing the guys to breaking points, and you can't have somebody there hurting you. You know, so having the good training partners is number one for me.
And you've really had to obviously evolve and adjust as Alex has had success throughout the years as the coach, because did you have anyone with world sort of level, you know, champion experience? Had you been through it before, or was Alex the one that really sort of?
No, I trained. I can't remember the year. Steve Duet. He beat Lester Ellis. I can't remember, back in the 90s. Yep. Vito and I coached him, and he beat Lester Ellis for the world interim kickboxing title.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a bit of success training boxers, a lot of success with jiu-jitsu guys, just as a coach.
Yeah.
And to me, it was just like I said, I don't force anybody into competing, but if they do, you know, number one, they've got to be fit, and two, they've got to be committed, you know. So I'm not going to give you my time if you can't give me your time.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of guys used to get pissed off because Alex would get pads and I wouldn't give it to anybody else, and go, well, he's the only guy here training.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, you want to come in here 2 days and I'm going to hurt my elbows for you, see you later, you know.
Well
nah,
said.
Nah. I'll put in what they put it, they give me, you know. That's all that it is. And look, Alex at the beginning, because you all know him, he's a really good guy, and he used to carry a lot of the guys.
Mm-hmm. You could see that today. There's just like obviously he's the UFC champ now, but like I could imagine him being the same from day one. Like, he was the first. He started doing sprints in the jogging laps, and then literally the next dude behind him was like, "Oh, we're doing sprints." And then they all started doing it, and it's like you could just kind of tell he is just that guy, right? Yeah. That is like puts on the leadership pants and sort of sets the standard.
Yeah, but his big fault there was he was developing bad habits because, oh, I don't want to kick Miles hard in the legs, or Miles is coming forward, but I don't want to jab him in the face, you know, because Miles doesn't realise that he's moving in with his hands down, and he was carrying them, you know, making them look good.
Yeah.
And then when his fights come up, I go, mate, you're developing yourself bad habits, you know. You've got to, you know, even with some of the things we were doing with jiu-jitsu, with the pressure thing, he doesn't want to put the weight on you or grind your face because he doesn't want to hurt you. And go, mate, you're developing bad habits by not doing it here, you know, because, you know, as the saying goes, you're going to fight the way you train or train the way you fight, you know, and that's what happens. And then we lost a lot of guys when Alex was fighting. It was funny that, you know, we'd have 10 guys that were, you know, wanted to fight. As soon as it'd get close to him getting into the fight, all of a sudden they'd all drop off, you know.
Yeah.
We're a bit more lucky now. We've got a few more guys that are there. But back in the early days, and Alex will tell you, it was me and him sparring because no one would show up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And this is where I started going, man, I was in my early 50s then, and I'm going, man, you want to be a champion, you can't spar a 50-year-old man. You need to spar these young guys, you know. And that's the first guys that I reached out to were Treko and that's how I became friends with him. You know, they accepted us as into their, like, you know, into their gym, like same as City Kickboxing Gym. And we became really good friends, and we'd go there and train. And they were the days on a Saturday morning. You know, Robbie Whittaker, Richard Walsh, Richie Vass, Manny Rodriguez. You know, they're all UFC guys. I've probably forgotten some guys, but they were all high-level guys. Saturday morning, it was on, you know. Great sparring. It had great atmosphere. Everybody was really respectful and cool, and they were really good times, you know. And it was a shame that when they split up, they lost that thing that used to happen on Saturday mornings there. Now I just try and do it at my gym on a Saturday morning. Yeah. But I really enjoy traveling to gyms to spar too, especially with the new guys, because I think that stress level is just the sort of same stress levels you're going to get into a fight, because you're out of your comfort zone, you know. You can easily be good in the gym, in your own gym, but then you go somewhere else and you fold, you know.
Yeah,
100%. Obviously, you know, we're talking about unique situations and putting, you know, getting your guys to go to different gyms and work with different bodies. And we're talking about Alex, you know, for those who don't know, he commonly goes to either Thailand or he goes to Auckland for a lot of his camps. Obviously does a lot of his camp at Freestyle as well. But he hasn't been able to do that this time. There's been a COVID outbreak that's just fucked everything up for everyone. So how's that been as an adjustment?
It's been pretty stressful at sometimes, you know, just the unknowns and, it's – at other times, I mean, once the camp got going, it's been good because, you know, all the guys that have come into the camp have been really, really good and supportive. And
you got some high-level guys in there.
Yeah, which is really, really good.
And there was a good vibe for hard sparring too. Very good vibe. You know, there was any shots that kind of were a little bit – questionable or sort of accidental, it was straight high fives. No one got there. Aggressive. Was no one. Yeah, yeah. It was cool to actually witness just that itself too.
Yeah, but that's how the sparring should be, you know. It's not about hurting each other. I mean, you know, a lot of the boxing sparring that you do, that I think a lot of the times they take it too far, that they're actually fighting, and I don't believe in that. I think you should always be 8 to 9 maximum sparring. Should never go to 10. If you're going to go to 10, just go and fight, you know. You know, the risk reward is just not worth it. That's my opinion. I know a lot of the, you know, the other guys that are from the other high level gyms, they think the same, you know, that you don't need to go to war, you know.
It's so interesting, everyone has a different opinion. So there's no wrong or right. It's just what works for your guy, I guess. You know, you talk about Tony Ferguson. I don't know if it's true, but he doesn't spar at all.
Cowboy's not Cowboy sparring doesn't anymore.
Spar.
Yeah.
John Jones doesn't spar during their camps. Is that right? Is that wrong? I mean,
I just think the sport's so young, right? That like we're sort of it's based on like everybody's getting new information at different times, you know.
But I'm a big fan of sparring, but it's the type of sparring that we do. A lot of the times when I haven't got the high level guys here, and we've just got our normal crew, but which a lot of them are really good. Mm-hmm. We spar three or four times a week. But we're just doing touch sparring. We'll finish with sparring every session to get the timing to get because you can't emulate that any other way. So you really, really need to spar. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I don't believe in the hard sparring either. To me, that's caveman days. You know, when I first started, it used to be that way that, you know, if you wore shin guards, you know, back, you know, I was doing Kaikoshin, you know, if you put shin guards on, you were a pussy, you know, and... Yeah, your shins would be black and blue and have lumps. Doesn't matter. You got to still wear, you know, check leg kicks. You know, very primitive. You know, the Kaikoshin Kai guys don't train like that anymore. You know, because it's just stupid. You know, but there's still people out there that believe in this. I mean, that's their opinion if it works for them. But man, I don't believe in, like I said, the risk reward where you can get hurt, the concussion side of it. Just too many things that are going to hurt the fight. And if it doesn't hurt them today, it'll hurt them later on in life, you know. And, you know, I don't want that. Same as with the kids. I don't like doing any contact at all with kids. I prefer them if they want to compete, just do jiu-jitsu. When they get older, they can smash their brains up a bit, you know, if they choose that way. But while they're young, I believe in a little bit of contact just so... Yeah, you know, they don't get
they
into
know
this.
What it is.
Yeah. But not the contact where, you know, they're getting dropped or they're getting concussion as a kid. You know, I think that's wrong. But I think they need to get the punch thrown at them so they're not doing these like a lot of the traditional styles. You see them, they're kicking 1 meter away and they think that they're actually connecting. You know, like you're giving the person a false sense of security.
You don't see many like horseman stance midsection punches get thrown around in street fights. Really.
No.
Definitely not. So, man, this time next week, you're in the Middle East. Thereabouts? Or are we still another week out from there? When do you guys head over?
No, we fly out next Friday.
Next Friday.
So, yeah, it will be late. So, I'd say, this time we'd probably be, in Abu Dhabi.
Man, in your wildest dreams...
the UFC 1 video tape of that.
Could you ever imagine that right now you would have the UFC champion and you're fighting on Fight Island to defend the belt, and we all thought Fight Island was going to be on some crazy beach. We now find out it's probably a lot more similar to a normal fight, but all the same, in this crazy-ass environment, I heard Lube, the manager... of Volks and your friend on the phone yesterday stressing out about not being able to get flights, now getting flights. Prior to that, I was talking to him. He was stressing out about a visa. Now I got a visa. All the tops and turns. Are you just excited to get there and fight after all that has gone into this crazy last 3 months of coronavirus, your gym having to shut down for a period, getting a granted license to start contact back in the gym? I'm just excited, obviously, to see you guys bring the belt back. But what's it been like for you?
Well, it has been a roller coaster because it's been, you know, from the beginning they offered us the fight, and then, you know, we got the exemptions. Mark Burros, you know, he got the ball rolling for us, plus our local member. They got in touch with Peter Dutton, and then, you know, he got in touch with the New South Wales Health, because it all starts from the top. And then, so if you've got somebody that can move those things and move it quicker, it's good. I mean, even the combat sports rang me as part of their side, and the guy was running through the rigmarole of what I got to do. And I said, I've already got the letter. He's gone. You've already got the letter. Yes, I've got the letter here in my hand now to tell me that we can train full contact. He couldn't believe that we got it done in that amount of time, which was good. But like I said, at every time there's been, you know, we don't know when we're going, how we're going to go, what's like the last time they had a show in Abu Dhabi, the weather, the arena was really, really hot. I think it was in the high 40s. No one could give us clarity on what where the arena was, what it was, how hot it was going to be. Did we have to start putting, you know, heaters in the gym and start training under the heat?
Mm-hmm.
There's been just so much of things that have come up, like little roadblocks. But, you know, like jiu-jitsu, you know, they put a roadblock in, you find your way around it to the next one, you know, and that's what we've been doing. And I will be glad when we do land on the island, yeah. It's actually going to happen.
Yep.
And then, you know, then again, it goes in our stages. You will have to do media. And none of us know what it's going to be like, you know, because none of us have ever had to experience this.
Yep.
And we're the first guys on Fight Island, so we're the experiment guys. So we'll see what happens.
Well, Volko, he spoke so much yesterday about adaptive, like he was fixated that he was this adaptive creature,
mm-hmm.
and it just didn't matter. And it's like, man, you want to be that dude when it comes to a scenario like what you guys have had to go through. Like, if you're some OCD guy that has to control all of these outcomes to get the most out of yourself, and some athletes are like that, and yeah. you know, to have a guy that is, he literally prides himself on being adaptive, it's like, oh, dude, lucky. Like, lucky you've got that guy for this particular fight, you know?
Yeah, and look, he doesn't stress. None of us really stress. We're going out for the world title, and they had something, like they had to stop it for some reason, and they stopped it. We were just about to walk out, and they went, someone went over, no, there's a two-minute break, and you know, people come out and that, and we're just having a joke because Mike Bisping walked past and he went, oh, sorry, guys, and we started joking and mucking around, and the girl from the Nevada commission, she looks at us and goes, do you realise these guys are going out for a world title? And we go, yeah, but this is the way we are. We're joking till we're walking out. We're, you know, bantering, you know, joking, mucking around, and a lot of people can't believe that we are that way in the change room. And we've been like that since day one. And I like doing it with all my fighters. I go, man, why start the adrenaline pumping nice and early? Let's wait till we get to when you're walking out, you know?
That way you can use it.
Yes.
Yeah. Man, It's amazing that you will walk out when it is in Vegas in T-Mobile Arena with 25,000 people, with the world champion, bright lights and everything, and you'll do the exact same thing at Wynn Stadium with one of your other promotions for a local fighter. Clearly, barely anyone in the stadium, but you're doing the exact same thing, giving the exact same cues and processes to build, obviously, people to be the next Volko. Do you see people coming from this area, from your schools, that can get to that level as well?
Yeah, well, young Colby's, you know, bright prospect.
Yeah, he's cool, that dude. Yeah. He's a super cool kid.
Yeah, yeah. He's got a really good attitude. Again, very similar to Alex, you know, that he's good-natured, wants to learn, loves training.
Yeah.
Again, he's a guy that...
He had a great vibe in the gym today. Like, yeah. I noticed instantly, like, even the way he introduced himself, you could feel, like, an energy come off him. And I didn't know the level of guys that, like if everyone was a high level there today, like, I didn't know the scene that well. But I remember thinking, I was like, I bet you that dude's real good.
Yeah, and he is, and he's only an amateur, you know, he hasn't even turned pro yet, but I think he's 10-1 or something.
Yeah,
he won that IMFI.
Yeah, on the Gold Coast. Yeah,
he won that. You know, he had, I think, 3 hard fights. And the kid, he got dropped in on my promotion in the first 30 seconds. He stepped back, the guy hit him in the head with a perfect roundhouse kick, dropped him. To his credit, he got back up, got the guy, took him down, and ended up sort of winning the round, you know. But it's not the way to win fights. But,
but you can't teach that. Like, you can't coach that into somebody.
Yeah, but he's not only is he got talent, but he's tough as, you know. But like I said, I don't want you to learn. You've already proved you're tough. Let's just work on the other side of it now. And he is willing to learn, and hopefully he makes it, you know, to the bright lights one day. And look, there's a lot of guys there, you know, that Trent,
he's clever.
Another one, yeah.
He's talented.
Yeah.
You know, we had, you know, Josh and Jamie, you know, they're both in the UFC. Brenton. Oh, we don't want to talk about Brenton. Brenton's a good guy, you know. Yeah, he brings a lot of good energy to the camp, you know. Yeah, he's fun and yeah, he's good with a banner. Yeah, Alan Philpott, yeah, from Ireland.
That was who I was talking about, man.
Yeah, he's a gangster.
He was good. I had never seen him before, but fuck, he was good.
He's from Ireland. Yeah. He came out here on a little boat, I think.
Has he fought on Eternal before?
I think he has.
I think I've watched him fight.
I'm not sure what Alan is, but again, you know, he put his hand up and came down, and you know, you can't thank these guys enough. And Blake Donnelly, you know, he's probably one of the better up and coming lightweights in Australia. He's he's got some serious skill. That kid. See, Martin Ewan was there today, you know. Oh, you know, world 1FC, lightweight and featherweight champion, So he's got, and he's won it a few times. So he comes in with, a lot of experience and that. I can't think of Big Cody that was there today, big solid boy, nice straight punches. I think he's got a background in boxing and that. I think he's had like 70-something fights. So he comes with a lot of experience and, very respectful guy, And, a lot like you've seen it, everybody there was good vibes, you can't ask for more, 100%. To me as a coach.
I think one of the things that I really picked up on between talking to Volks yesterday, being at the gym and then talking to you guys now, is that I feel like you could go so deep into the fighting world and you could dissect every single thing and you could just chase around these half percents and you could go as crazy as you want. And I think that your philosophy is just very simple, based around doing the majority of the things right. And just keeping everything simple, whether it's the pre-fight routine, whether it's the, the vibe in the gym. It seems simple in a world where a lot of people try and complicate it to find the edge. But it's seems like you guys have found the edge by just doing all of the simple stuff right.
And that's one of the things I say to the kids, it's my big thing. I get them to stand on the line, and their feet have got to be on the line. And I always say to them, if you can't do the little things right, how are you going to do the big things right?
That's awesome.
So true. That's sick.
It's, that's the way I've always been. You got to have a good foundation. And then, like I said, jumping arm bars work for you and flying triangles work for you and, axe kicks work for you, well, you bring them into your game, because sometimes people that are unorthodox and off-center have, good success, Tony Ferguson for one, Nate Diaz, they do things that you're not supposed to do, but it works. Mm. DJ Dillashaw, he does everything wrong that you shouldn't do in boxing. He does, but it works for him because people don't expect it,
Hasn't it been an interesting journey so far? I mean, even in the last, let's just say 10 plus years, there's been such an evolution in the sport, and even right now it seems like it's going so fast. You've got dietitians that are setting standards, you've got strength and conditioning coaches that are setting standards, you've got all of these experts surrounding the sport that are just evolving it and showing better ways to do things, but it doesn't show any signs of slowing down. It just seems like there's constantly evolving better ways to do things. You would have seen the sport changed so much over the time that you've been practicing in.
Yeah, the same as jiu-jitsu, both those sports are both evolving, and
do you stay on top of it?
Oh, look, I'm always watching tape or watching jiu-jitsu breakdowns or videos, instructionals. Oh, I love all that stuff.
That's sort so of,
this is why Joe's a strategy man. I said it. Yeah. I told you.
But that's I know Eugene's the same as me. We just enjoy it. Just watching whatever. And like I said, it might not work for me, but I look at it and I go, oh yeah, that's gonna work. Guy, he's got these flexible hips. He can do the inverted guard. Go through these moves. Hey, check this guy out. So, like I said, to me, I enjoy doing that because, you know, I'm pointing the, you know, I can't do the inverted guard and all these, you know, weird shit anymore, but yeah, you can, you know. So, why should I hold you back from doing it? Because I just want to go now and just do, you know, the least jujitsu as possible and just be, you know, a pressure type passer, you know, and stay on top, you know, where you're young, you've got a big gas tank, you know. And as you can see with Volks, and we do a lot of scrambling type stuff, you know, and a lot of guys blow out, you know, when they come and they have to roll with my guys, that it's, they might be better at the jiu-jitsu side, but when it comes to no-gi scrambling and getting out of stuff, because we do so much of it, guys that are better, all of a sudden, you know, they get a little bit behind and they get a little bit more behind and the next minute they're losing, you know, because their batteries are dead. And the guys that have got a little bit less skill, but he's got a bigger gas tank with a lot of good scrambling.
It's so hard to keep them down. They're just constantly moving.
Can anyone keep him down? I've never seen any.
That was impressive.
We've tried, and we're like 40 kilos heavier than him.
he like today, you know, his back was a bit sore, but
he wasn't staying down.
No, but he's usually a lot quicker, which usually harder to get him down. It's just his back was giving a little bit of pain, and but you know that's it, you know. But you know, last Monday when we sparred, you know, oh.
If you're not feeling sore at this time of the camp, then you. I said it to Elliot Compton. We were chatting today, and I said, if you're not feeling sore at the end of a camp, you've taken some shortcuts. So,
and look, that we've sort of been using a lot more science now as well. We've got the Omega Wave, and you know, the heart rate monitors.
It measures everything, man.
You can use it. Alex has been doing it first thing in the morning.
Did he have the?
No, that's just the heart rate monitor.
Yeah,
this is showing your zones, like everything. Should you be training? Or effectively look at it and just go: Are you overtrained? Are you undertrained? Are you in the peak zone?
And then pull harder.
Oh God, terrible!
We have used it a lot in the camp. You know, where we've done a hard session and then the next day. Yeah, we had like a lactic session that morning and it said no, but he could wrestle. Yeah. So because you're using yes.
That's sick.
Yeah. So it was funny that he was allowed to wrestle, but he wasn't allowed to do the lactic workout, which was more of an explosive lactic type.
It's good, man. So the other boys
got the lactic workout and Alex got to, you know, wrestle with one of the other guys and drill like that, and that's the sort of stuff that that as a coach you don't have to look at your guy, because overtraining is worse than undertraining, you know, because once you break down those muscles it takes a lot longer for them to rest and heal up, where if you undertrain you can still push yourself and get to that level, you know. And guys like Alex, if that's, as a coach, that's my problem with him, no undertraining, it's just his overtraining. And same as Colby and a lot of these guys, Trent, most of the boys here, you know, they're good trainers. They love training. And as a coach, they're the guys that you got to keep an eye on, that they don't do too much, especially coming towards the end of the camp. And,
because that's when you get injuries.
We broke the schedule because the boys wanted we'd finish the schedule and they wanted to do some, you know, like a king of the wall, you know, just a little one, you know. And maybe that's what irritated Volko's back this morning, you know, because it wasn't part of the schedule. And I didn't see his results this morning, probably because they told him not to do what he had to spar. And him being him, he probably came to spar and knowing that there was a lot of people, you know, media and stuff there today. So I guess he felt obligated. But I didn't see his scan results this morning. So it'd be interesting to see whether it did tell him or not about sparring this morning.
One of the cool things that I picked up on watching him train today, and it's scary if he's like better than what we saw him today, but he was like almost chain wrestling, like the way you see really good black belts like chain together their passing. And that to me just was like, I've never seen that in that way. And like the frequency and the volume of what
he did. Like, is that something that you guys put a lot of time into?
Yeah, like I said, all the scrambling drills, and then we do...
Or is that what you call scrambling?
Well, that was more... What we've been working on him is, you know, to hold someone down, but if you hold Alex down, it's very, very hard to hold him down. He's got really good scrambles. He's got really little legs, and he makes a little bump, and he gets his leg in, and then he's out, you know? And look, if anybody's ever had to wrestle with him or... hold on to him, you realize how strong he is. You know, he is a freak of nature.
What he does is MMA. That's what he does. Because we're so used to seeing a striker and they're so great at striking, and then, oh, he did a good shot and that's cool, or a jiu-jitsu player. He just knows how to tie everything together so well that he knows when to take a shot or pull back and then use his striking, or to take someone to the ground, or to use the walls around him. It's unbelievable. Yeah. That's probably the biggest thing that I've ever seen with him. Is,
well, it's funny because that's been asked to me a few times, you know, over the years. You know, guys will say, you know, what's Alex's strength? Is it his grappling? Is it his striking? What is it? And I go, well, Alex is good. He's got good wrestling. You know, he's got good jiu-jitsu. He's got pretty good striking. But what he's really good at is putting those things all together.
Yeah.
So he's really good at putting his punches into takedowns, his takedowns into the punches, and, you know, leg kicks into punches, leg kicks into takedowns. We drill a lot of that stuff. And, I mean, it does, like, sometimes I think, you know, that the boys must get pissed off that we're just doing these same repetitious things over, but then in the end you see the results, you know, of how they move, you know, because, you know, repetition, and then bring it into more of a, you know, you drill it and then you drill it live, so... you get a feel for a bit of resistance, and then you're going to see whether it works for you or whether it doesn't, or what adjustments you need to do. And, you know, when Alex does get you, whether it's on the wall or whatever, you just see him. He's not letting you sit there. He's just constantly, he's constantly attacking you, you know. So it doesn't give you time to really think, you know. We've been trying to hold a bit of it back because sometimes he just... He goes too much and gives too much space, and that's where, like I said, we've been working a lot on his pressure and holding pressure, because, like I said, if he holds you, you feel it.
I think that you probably wouldn't even realize, because obviously you're focusing on your job at hand, but how much of an influence and an impact you're actually having on the rest of the martial arts community in Australia, particularly us. Yeah. I mean, Sel and I have spent a lot of time watching you guys in your camps, or spending time watching you hold pads with each other, just watching how you work with Volks, and it's even changed our timetables and the way that we want to coach and give the service that we do at our gym, and bringing it all together into more of an MMA environment rather than a striking or a jiu-jitsu based, you know, environment. We're starting classes where you are linking it all together, because that's the sport. It's not just striking and it's not just jiu-jitsu, it's everything together. And it's certainly something that being around you guys has definitely influenced and forced.
I'm still a firm believer in training each style as an individual style, but then I like to say that we do striking for MMA, we do wrestling for MMA, and, you know, jiu-jitsu for MMA, because, you know, and this is my personal point. My guys, I'll tell you that I do not believe on being in the bottom in MMA. So if you're on the bottom, you've got to get to the top.
Yeah.
If you've got, you know, one crazy, you know, guard like a Nate Diaz, and you've got a chance of pulling an armbar or a triangle, do it, but then get out of there.
Mm-hmm.
Don't hang there, because, again, the risk reward is not worth it. Mm-hmm. So that's just me and what I really instill into my guys, and that's what I said about the scrambling a lot, because we never want to be on the bottom, we want to be on top. Yep. And so that, and then holding that top position, you know?
I think the thing that I probably resonated with Alex the most, and your gym and everyone that came from there, and what you guys instill, is the fact that if they were to fight you, no matter what, you would never accept someone going to that cage underdone. I think everyone knows if they're going to fight an Alex or a Kobe or anyone under your banner, they're going to be prepared mm-hmm. as fit as fuck.
Yeah.
And that's like, to be honest, scary for most people because then they know 100% they're not going to get tired and they would never accept staying down. As you said, they'll always get back up to their feet and they'll just keep fighting, which is, I mean, that's half the battle really. Like getting their fit, strong, healthy is a massive, massive part of the battle.
Well, it is to me, and I'll always say it that, you know, your fitness. What did what's his name, Eric Paulson said? Yep. You know, fitness is the mother of all techniques, and I really use that with all the guys that they've got to be fit, and then I don't care whether they win, lose, or draw, as long as they've given me that time that I said earlier on. Then nothing else matters because I know that they've become a better person, martial artist, whatever, fighter, and that's important to me. But again, if they're not going to give me, and I've done this with guys that haven't wanted to train, and they've just done their own thing, you know, come here and there, and they've wanted to fight, I just don't corner them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I don't. I go, you haven't given me the time. Why should I give you the time? And I've done that a lot to a lot of guys. You know, I'm not interested. You know, to me, if anyone knows me, I don't really like cornering and that. I prefer to be in the gym away from cameras and all that.
Mm-hmm.
I just prefer that side of it. I've been thrust into it and I've had to accept it, you know, but I don't – it's not the part that I enjoy. I enjoy the bit at the gym and the comradeship and getting the guy – making the guys better. That's what I enjoy, you know.
Have you experienced, obviously, since Alex becoming the champ, a lot of a desire are people coming to you and saying, please train me? And is the gym getting a lot more members? Has there been a big impact?
More international than around here. You know, I mean, local people, they've got their own gyms. They're going to go and, you know, they're going to not like you for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. But, you know, outside the area, we get a lot, like I said, from around the world, from Brazil, America. We had a couple of guys from America here last year. They spent a few months here. Yeah. We had guys from Canada, I think, England. I can't remember. But we are getting a lot of, you know, just randoms, you know, even from Brazil. I guess they want to train with Alex and see what's going on. I've seen that. To a 100th degrees at City Kickboxing, you know, their gym is now, you know, the United Nations gym, you know, and you know, they've got a really good atmosphere. I've never seen, apart from Tigers sparring, but they've got the space. City Kickboxing sparring is like another level of not only ability and everything else, but the amount of people there that are there to spar. Now they've got to do it in stages because there's just so many people.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah. And everybody's tripping over each other. And yeah, I try and make little arenas. They've got no chance there. They'd be there till it'd take them 5 days for sparring, you know, because it's just that many people.
That's
and high level guys too, you know.
Mm. They really are sort of like progressing, obviously, this area of the world for us. The combat sports movement forward, and everyone sort of got their eyes on them. Do you think that they feel the pressure to perform, or do you think they're just so comfortable in their, you know, in their ways that?
I think they, you know, they haven't changed from anything that they've ever done. You know, they're in here to make their boys win the same as I am, and I don't think they've changed their philosophy at all. You know, nobody likes to lose. You know, they're always still trying to improve themselves, you know, whether we bring in Frankie Hickman for this or whoever, you know, knowledge is power. And I think if you don't think that way, you know, and you think you know it all, you're gonna fail eventually, you know.
Do you see this area of the world producing a lot more high level guys at the top of the UFC compared to probably what it has been in the past?
Well, now that people can see that it can be done, that's going to
the 4 minute mile.
It's gonna make it easier for the next guy because, you know, when I started with Alex was, are we going to get into the UFC? That was our first thing, you know. It was hard, you know. And this now with Alex and now winning the title, it's opened up for everyone now, because the UFC and that look at guys and they go, oh yeah, that, you know, if this guy says he's good, well, he must be good, you know, where before I think we were just there to fill the numbers in, you know, I'll bring the Aussie boys in so the Aussies have got somebody to cheer about. And no disrespect to those guys. Yep. It's just, you know, the sport's evolved and, you know, those guys opened it up for, you know, guys like, you know, Alex and everybody else to come through, and Rob, you know, and, you know, who brought it back in, you know, the first time. But now you get like the Colbys and, you know, you probably got a young guy out there and they go, well, if Alex done it, I'm going to do it, you know. You know, you got a good guy up there, which I reckon should get signed, is Shannon, you know. Shannon Ross, he's a gun, you know, watching that guy. I mean, guy's skill level is, you know. Yeah, again, a guy that's got heaps of cardio. I love his scrambling. Yeah, you know, it's good striking. Kid's good all round, you know. I think, you know, he should get the call up sooner or later.
Well, well, unfortunately, Shannon sort of got, you know, that's MMA for you. He lost his belt recently. But his head's stronger than ever, and it happened for a reason. And he's preparing for his next fight, which is very soon. And hopefully he gets the W back, gets his redemption. And then, yeah, next step is obviously, you know, well, the big show, if that's...
Yeah, but it's so hard for those guys, because I know, like, with Alex and even Brad to say, and a lot of these guys, they got this winning record, and then there's so much pressure on them, because if they lose, they're back to stage one, and they can't afford that, you know. And
it's so true.
So really, really, I've seen such a big change in Brad since Brad got in. You know, he's a lot more relaxed, and you know, because the people that are around him knew he was good enough, but to, you know, these other, you know, people, they just think, oh, he's just, you know, another kickboxer, you know, whatever. But, you know, the kid's got legitimate wrestling and jiu-jitsu, you know. He's good all around. And that last fight he had, you know.
What I think is incredible about those guys, and I think maybe Eugene was saying it, or maybe Izzy was saying it in previous interviews, where their career has been specifically sculpted, which has allowed them to get to where they are right now. So what I mean by that is Brad's had a ridiculous amount of kickboxing fights, and Izzy had a ridiculous 70-something kickboxing, Muay Thai, whatever it was, K1 fights for this moment. And obviously you can see it in someone like Izzy. His composure is there. He's been on the big stage in so many promotions in China and all sorts of things. So the competition is not scary for him anymore. So he can focus on the other things.
He kind of felt like a star the day he was in the UFC, as opposed to, I think, that what you were speaking to before with like the Aussie boys, that none of them felt like a star. They all kind of, there was probably a feeling in their own head that like, oh, I'm sort of, I don't even know if I should be here, but I'm just thankful to be here. Whereas I think that you get like what Whittaker done, he wins a belt. And then that's like the 4-minute mile to all the Aussies. And they're like, oh, it can be done. And it's like when the 4-minute mile got broke, it's like it lasted for forever. And then it got done, and then it was week after week after week. And obviously it's a longer time frame when you're talking about like MMA. Obviously there's so many different variables, but it's almost like there's a belief now in these Aussie guys. And I think that it's important that there's a like gyms that you can go to, and there's coaches that you can go to, and you can then instill your belief that he did that for Alex or for Rob or for Israel. And now there's these hot spots that pop up. And when you guys get boys in the UFC, it's going to be the same thing. It's like you can go to combat and there's guys in the UFC. And I think that effect just on people's mentality, because I think like believing, like you can wanting something and believing that you are worthy of something is two totally different things. And I think that's sort of what happened with the, you know, Alex and Rob. And I think that you'll see the floodgates open now just purely based on like the mentality.
I think the same goes for Joe, which I loved him being vulnerable about before, was when he was saying, I don't know if I don't know if I'm the coach that can get him there, but he knows he's the coach. And it's like, and that's the thing. Everyone thinks there's some formula or there's some special, you know, gates that you walk through and you're the guy. We're all doing our thing.
Everyone's giving it a crack. I guess the best thing that Joe's also opened up is the fact of, we'll use Shannon as an example of, He's going to be most likely fighting in UAE Warriors. His goal is the UFC, but we can pick up the phone openly and say, Joe, we're not 100% sure on this. Yep. Like, we're in this with Shannon. We want the best for him. You've seen this previously before with Alex when he was fighting win after win after win, wasn't getting in. Alex was the first to say he was this close to giving up because what more could he do? Yep. He was putting it all on the line. He just had a kid. Shannon's no different, except he's got like
four kids.
Yeah. And we necessarily don't have the answers. We're all trying to piece this together to say we think this is the best thing, but more than anything, we're open enough to say if we don't know, we'll ask the OGs or the people that know, because they've been there, like Joe's and the likes of that type of stuff. So it's really made the world a lot more connected.
Yep.
Mm. When it very much felt previously, from what I could see, everyone was on their little island,
yep,
doing their thing within their gym, not communicating. Some people had success, some people didn't, but the knowledge wasn't being passed around as a group or a community, which is great to see that now taking place.
100%.
Well, one thing you guys brought earlier on that, I think some people still believe that you need to go to America to train, yeah, you know. And that was, I mean, I was in the same belief because you didn't know if you were doing it. I mean, in my heart I believed that I was, but yeah, was it the right thing that if I didn't take him to, say, you know, what's it, Winkle Jacks or whatever his name is.
Yeah,
if I didn't take him there or Alpha Male to one of these renowned gyms, that is Alex going to be noticed, you know? And at one stage there, we were going to do it. We were going, you know, we had our thing. We were going to go there for 3 months, and then while we were there, we were going to try and get a fight, you know? You know, the only other way that I said we were going to get in was someone pulls out. You know, it's a fighting game. You're at those weights. You know, Shannon is at that, unfortunately, at that weight where, you know, Dana was going to cut it out, so they haven't been putting, they weren't promoting it and they weren't putting in the guys. But I think that's all over with now, and hopefully they start bringing in some flyweights because, you know, yeah, Demetrius Johnson is my favourite fighter, you know. Mm-hmm. He's, yeah, to me, he's the ultimate in as an MMA fighter, you know. Everything he did was good, you know. The scrambles, the striking, the wrestling, the jiu-jitsu.
Flying armbars.
Yeah, you know, like the guy was a freak, you know. And I always, you know, go, that is the ultimate. So a lot of the big guys are never going to move like that, you know. And to say that he was boring, the casuals found him boring because he was just too good for himself, or what is it, for his own good, you know. Yeah. He was, and yeah, look, going back now, we don't need to go to America. We got guys here, you know. We got a couple of, you know, former and world champion, you know, and plus all the other guys, you know, that are here that are up and coming, and you know, you've seen them today, you know, some of the best guys that are around coming down, and they all got along and they all good sparring and, yeah.
Well, I think that's probably like a unique thing about Australia where it's like you feel so, like I grew up in Cairns and we were so far away from people that there was like in my generation in motocross, there was like 8 or 9 guys that went on to do like so well from this tiny town with one club. But it was like all of these guys, because we were so far away, everyone got together. So like all the best dudes got together. There was no segregation, because if we wanted to be with fast guys, like we had to be with the fastest guys here. Yeah. And it sort of seems like that's kind of happening in Australia. Like America, it's got their teams, and you don't, you know, you've got your Team Alpha Male, you've got your, you know, whoever these teams are. But it's like in Australia, it's like, oh, you kind of don't have that luxury. So it's sort of almost creating that effect where it's like you're borrowing from everybody, because it's like we're so far away. And it's even like you include Tiger in that, and then City Kickboxing, and it's like you've kind of got this like little southern hemisphere thing going on where it's like everyone just really wants to push everyone forward. Like, let's just try and get as many to the dance as we can. And that seems to be like lifting up everybody, you know?
Yeah, it has.
It's like that Anzac spirit. It's just strong.
Yeah. Mm.
We're all one team. That's the way to put it, really, right?
Yeah, and I mean, you know, Eugene will always say that too. You know, he's always bags Australia, but he, yeah, it's just a bit of banter between the two of us. But, you know, like he said, you know, whenever there's an, if an Australian guy's fighting, unless he's fighting a fellow Kiwi guy, he's always going to back the Australian guy, you know. And, yeah, and there was a bit of pressure on him when, you know, when Izzy was fighting Rob and everything, you know. And Eugene didn't see it that way because he said if Rob was fighting anybody but Izzy, he would have been backing Rob. He'd been backing Rob the whole time, every fight, you know. Although at one stage they were going to have to meet, but every time he fought, they were backing Rob, you know. Rob was there, you know, he was an Anzac like us, you know.
What an incredible experience that was.
Yeah, man.
That fight.
Yeah.
Were you guys at that one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bloody hell.
I've still never been. I need to get to one, eh?
Yeah, man.
You never been to UFC?
Nah. All the years of being in America, I never went to one. Don't know why.
The next one you'll go to will be Volko defending the belt on Aussie shores.
I'm down for that one.
Joe will make that happen. They'll bring the belt. Yeah,
the mayor of the gong.
Yeah, they'll bring the belt back after this next few rage.
Well, you know everyone July on the 11. Door.
I used to. I'm too old now.
You'll definitely control that.
How'd you get tickets to the UFC? No. Joe knows the guys on the door.
Oh, mate, don't laugh. I used to get these phone calls at 3 o'clock in the morning, you know. Yeah, guys would ring up and trying to get into a nightclub. You know what I do? Because I get up early, no matter what time I go to bed, I would ring them up at 6 o'clock, yeah, 6:30, 7 o'clock. I'd just keep ringing them if they didn't wake up till they woke up. But then I'd still ring them again 30 minutes later for waking me up that night. And then I'd make sure that they don't get into that nightclub.
Fair play. Good move, man. Good move. We know, obviously, it's pitch black out here at the moment, so you got to get home, get some rest, look after the champ tomorrow.
Yeah.
We do finish usually these podcasts off with some words of wisdom from the people we respect that always have helped us, and you've helped us immensely over this period of time. We're appreciative of being in the gym, appreciative of your time and coming on the podcast. Is there anything that you've lived by that you think is the way forward for people, or any quotes or words of wisdom that you could pass on?
Well, one thing I tell my fighters is start strong, finish stronger. And, yeah, so that means you need a gas tank, you know what I mean? You want to drain them. So, but to have that, again, you know, you want to start the fight and you want to finish strong.
Yeah.
That's it.
Put in the work. Great stuff, man. Really appreciate you coming on, bro.
Thanks for having me, guys. It's been fun. We'll do it again soon.
Definitely. Awesome.
Thanks, hopefully, Joe. When we come back with a belt.
Yeah, 100%. No doubt.
Cheers. Thank you.
Cheers. Man.